Welcome to Jaded YA Reads, a YA read-aloud podcast for teens, tweens, and adults, brought to you by the Wells Public Library. This season, we'll be reading The Inheritance Games by Jennifer Lynn Barnes, with permissions from Little, Brown, and Company. Chapter 27. "We could be making something out of nothing," I said hours later. Jameson and I stood in the Hawthorne House Library, looking up at the shelves circling the room, filled with books from 18-foot ceiling to floor. "Hawthorne-born or Hawthorne-made, there's always something to be played." Jameson spoke with a sing-song rhythm, like a child skipping rope. But when he brought his gaze down from the shelves to me, there was nothing childlike in his expression. "Everything is something in Hawthorne House." "Everything," I thought, "and everyone." "Do you know how many times in my life one of my grandfather's puzzles has sent me to this room?" Jameson turned slowly in a circle. "He's probably rolling in his grave that it took me this long to see it." "What do you think we're looking for?" I asked. "What do you think we're looking for, Eris?" Jameson had a way of making everything sound like it was either a challenge or an invitation. Or both. "Focus," I told myself. I was here because I wanted answers, at least as much as the boy beside me did. "If the clue is a book by its cover," I said, turning the riddle over in my mind, "then I'd guess that we're looking for either a book or a cover, or maybe a mismatch between the two." "A book that doesn't match its cover?" Jameson's expression gave no hint of what he thought of that suggestion. "I could be wrong." Jameson's lips twisted. Not quite a smile, not quite a smirk. "Everyone is a little wrong sometimes, Eris." An invitation and a challenge. I had no intention of being a little wrong, not with him. The sooner my body remembered that, the better. I physically turned away from Jameson to do a 360, slowly taking in the scope of the room. Just looking up at the shelves felt like standing at the edge of the Grand Canyon. We were completely encircled by books, going up two stories. There must be thousands of books in here. Given how big the library was, given how high the shelves went up, if we were looking for a book mismatched to its cover sleeve. "This could take hours," I said. Jameson smiled, with teeth this time. "Don't be ridiculous, Eris. It could take days." We worked in silence. Neither one of us left for dinner. A thrill ran through my body each time I realized that I was holding a first edition. Every once in a while, I'd flip a book open to find it signed. Stephen King, J.K. Rowling, Toni Morrison. Eventually, I managed to stop pausing in awe at what I held in my hands. I lost track of time, lost track of everything except the rhythm of pulling books off shelves and covers off books, replacing the cover, replacing the book. I could hear Jameson working. I could feel him in the room as we moved through our respective shelves, closer and closer to each other. He'd taken the upper level. I was working down below. Finally, I glanced up to see him right on top of me. "What if we're wasting our time?" I asked. My question echoed through the room. "Time is money, Eris. You have plenty to waste." "Stop calling me that." "I have to call you something, and you didn't seem to appreciate Mystery Girl, or the abbreviation thereof." It was on the tip of my tongue to point out that I didn't call him anything. I hadn't said his name once since entering the room. But somehow, instead of offering that retort, I looked up at him, and a different question came out of my mouth instead. "What did you mean in the car today, when you said that the last thing I needed was for anyone to see us together?" I could hear him taking books off shelves and covers off books and replacing them both, again and again, before I got a response. "You spent the first day at the fine institution that is Heights Country Day," he said. "What do you think I meant?" He had always had to be the one asking questions, always had to turn everything around. "Don't tell me," Jameson murmured up above, "that you didn't hear any whispers." I froze, thinking about what I had heard. "I met a girl." I made myself continue working my way through the shelf, book off, cover on, book reshelved. "Thea." Jameson snorted. "Thea isn't a girl. She's a whirlwind wrapped in a hurricane wrapped in steel, and every girl in that school follows her lead, which means I'm persona non grata and have been for a year." He paused. "What did Thea say to you?" Jameson's attempt to sound casual might have fooled me if I had been looking at his face, but without the expression to sell it, I heard a telltale note underneath. He cares. Suddenly, I wished I hadn't brought Thea up. Sowing discord was probably her goal. "Avery?" Jameson's use of my given name confirmed for me that he didn't just want a response. He needed one. Thea kept talking about this house, I said carefully, about what it must be like for me to live here. That was true, or true enough. About all of you. Is it still a lie, Jameson asked loftily, if you're masking what matters, but what you're saying is technically true? He wanted the truth. Thea said there was a girl and that she died. I spoke like I was ripping off a bandage, too fast to second-guess what I was saying. Overhead, the rhythm of Jameson's work slowed. I counted 5 seconds of utter silence before he spoke. Her name was Emily. I knew, though I couldn't pinpoint how, that he wouldn't have said it if I'd been able to see his face. Her name was Emily, he repeated, and she wasn't just a girl. A breath caught in my throat. I forced it out and kept checking books, because I didn't want him to know how much I'd heard in his tone. Emily mattered to him. She still matters to him. I'm sorry, I said. Sorry for bringing it up, and sorry she was gone. We should call it a night. It was late, and I didn't trust myself not to say something I might regret. Jameson's working rhythm stopped overhead and was replaced with the sound of footsteps as he made his way up and down the wrought iron spiral stairs. He positioned himself between me and the exit. Same time tomorrow? It suddenly felt imperative that I not let myself look at his deep green eyes. We're making good progress, I said, forcing myself to head for the door. Even if we don't find a way to shortcut the process, we should be able to make it through all the shelves within the week. Jameson leaned towards me as I passed. Don't hate me, he said softly. Why would I hate you? I felt my pulse jump in my throat. Because of what he'd said? Or because of how close he was to me? There's a slight chance, though, he might not be done within the week. Why not? I asked, forgetting to avoid looking at him. He brought his lips right next to my ear. This isn't the only library in Hawthorne House. Chapter 28. How many libraries did this place have? That was what I focused on as I walked away from Jameson. Not the feel of his body too close to mine. Not the fact that Thea hadn't been lying when she said there had been a girl that had... or that she'd died. Emily. I tried and failed to banish the whisper in my mind. Her name was Emily. I reached the main staircase and hesitated. If I went back to my wing now, if I tried to sleep, all I would do is replay my conversation with Jameson again and again. I glanced back over my shoulder to see if he'd followed me, and saw Orin instead. My head of security had told me I was safe here. He seemed to believe it, but still he trailed me, invisible until he wanted to be seen. "Turning in for the night?" Orin asked me. No. There was no way I could sleep, no way I could even close my eyes. So I explored. Down one long hall, I found a theater. Not a movie theater, but something closer to an opera house. The walls were golden. A red velvet curtain obscured what had to be a stage. The seats were on an incline. The ceiling arched, and when I flipped a switch, hundreds of tiny lights came to life along that arc. I remembered Dr. Mack telling me about the Hawthorne Foundation's support of the arts. The next room over was filled with musical instruments, dozens of them. I bent to look at a violin with an S carved into one side of the strings, its mirror image on the other. That's a Stradivarius. Those words were issued like a threat. I turned to see Grayson standing in the doorway. I wondered if he'd been following us, and for how long. He stared at me, his pupils black and fathomless, the irises around them ice gray. You should be careful, Miss Grams. I'm not going to break anything, I said, stepping back from the violin. You should be careful, Grayson reiterated, his voice soft but deadly. With Jameson, the last thing my brother needs is you and whatever this is. I glanced at Orin, but his face was impassive, like he couldn't hear anything that passed between us. It's not his job to eavesdrop, it's his job to protect me. And he doesn't see Grayson as a threat. This, being me, I shot back, or the terms of your grandfather's will? I wasn't the one who upended their lives. But I was here, and Tobias Hawthorne wasn't. Logically, I knew that my best option was to avoid confrontation, avoid him altogether. This was a big house. Standing this close to Grayson, it didn't feel nearly big enough. My mother hasn't left her room in days. Grayson stared into me. Xander nearly blew himself up today. Jameson has one bad idea from ruining his life, and none of us can leave the estate without being hounded by the press. The property damage they've caused alone. Say nothing, turn away, don't engage.
Do you think this is easy for me?
I asked instead.
Do you think I want to be stalked by the paparazzi?
You want the money. Jason Hawthorne looked at me from on high. How could you not, growing up the way you did? That was just dripping with condescension.
Like you don't want the money, I retorted, growing up the way you did? Maybe I haven't had everything handed to me my entire life, but...
You have no idea, Grayson said lowly, how ill-prepared you are. A girl like you?
You don't know me.
A rush of fury surged through my veins as I cut him off.
I will, Grayson promised. I'll know everything about you soon enough.
Every bone in my body said that he was a person who kept his promises. My access to funds might be somewhat limited currently, but the Hawthorne name still means something. There will always be people tripping over themselves to do favors for any one of us. He didn't move, didn't blink, wasn't physically aggressive in any way, but he bled power and he knew it. Whatever you're hiding, I will find it. Every last secret. Within days, I'll have a detailed dossier on every person in your life. Your sister, your father, your mother.
Don't talk about my mother. My chest was tight. Breathing was a challenge.
Stay away from my family, Ms. Grams. Grayson pushed past me. I'd been dismissed.
Or what?
I called after him. And then, possessed by something I couldn't quite name, I continued. Or what happened to Emily will happen to me?
Grayson jerked to a halt, every muscle in his body taut.
Don't you say her name. His posture was angry, and his voice sounded like it was about to crumble, like I'd gutted him.
Not just Jameson. My mouth went dry. Emily didn't just matter to Jameson.
I felt a hand on my shoulder. Orin. His expression was gentle, but clearly he wanted me to leave it alone.
You won't last a month in this house.
Grayson managed to pull himself together long enough to issue that prediction like a royal issuing a decree.
In fact, I'd lay money that you're gone within the week.
Chapter 29. Libby found me shortly after I made my way back to my room. She was holding a stack of electronics.
Elisa said I should buy some things for you. She said you haven't bought anything for yourself.
I haven't had time. I was exhausted, overwhelmed, and past the point of being able to wrap my mind around anything that had happened since I'd moved into Hawthorne House, including Emily.
Lucky for you, Libby replied. I have nothing but time.
She didn't sound entirely happy about that, but before I could probe further, she began setting things down on my desk. New laptop, a tablet, an e-reader loaded with romance novels in case you need some escapism.
Look around this place, I said. My life is escapism at the moment.
That got a grin out of Libby. Have you seen the gym? She asked me, the awe in her voice making it clear that she had.
Or the chef's kitchen?
Not yet. My gaze caught suddenly on the fireplace, and I found myself listening, wondering. Was anyone back there?
You won't last a month in this house.
I didn't think Grayson had meant that as a physical threat, and Orin certainly hadn't reacted as if my life were being threatened. Still, I shivered.
Ave, there's something I have to show you.
Libby flipped open my new tablet's cover. Just for the record, it's okay if you want to yell. I cut off when I saw what she'd pulled up. It was a video of Drake. He was standing next to the reporter. The fact that his hair was combed told me that the interview hadn't been a total surprise. The caption across the screen read, "Friend of the Grams family."
Avery was always a loner, Drake said on screen. She didn't have friends.
I had Max, and that was all I needed.
I'm not saying she was a bad person. I think she was just kind of desperate for attention. She wanted to matter. A girl like that, a rich old man.
He trailed off. Let's just say there were definitely daddy issues.
Libby cut the video off there.
Can I see that? I asked, gesturing through the tablet, with murder in my heart, and probably my eyes.
That's the worst of it, Libby assured me. Would you like to yell now?
Not at you. I took the tablet and scrolled through the related videos, all of them interviews or think pieces, all about me. Former classmates, co-workers, Libby's mom. I ignored the interviews until I got to one that I couldn't ignore. It was labeled simply, Sky Hawthorne and Zara Hawthorne Caligaris. The two of them stood behind a podium at what appeared to be some kind of press conference. So much for Grayson's assertion that his mother hadn't left her room in days.
Our father was a great man. Zara's hair whipped up in a subtle wind. The expression on her face was stoic. He was a revolutionary entrepreneur, a once-in-a-generation philanthropist, and a man who valued family above all else. She took Skye's hand. As we grieve his passing, rest assured that we will not see his life's work die with him. The Hawthorne Foundation will continue operations. My father's numerous investments will undergo no immediate changes. While we cannot comment on the complex legalities of the current situation, I can assure you that we are working with the authorities, elder abuse specialists, and a team of medical and legal professionals to get to the bottom of the situation. She turned to Skye, whose eyes brimmed with unshed tears. Perfect, picturesque, dramatic. Our father was our hero, Zara declared. We will not allow him, in death, to become a victim. To that end, we are providing the press with the results of a genetic test that proves conclusively that, contrary to the libellous reports and speculations circulating in the tabloids, Avery Graham's is not the result of infidelity on the part of our father, who was faithful to his beloved wife, our mother, for the entirety of their marriage. We as a family are as bewildered as bewildered at recent events as all of you, but genes don't lie. Whatever else this girl may be, she is not a Hawthorne. The video cut off. Dumbfounded, I thought back to Grayson's parting shot. I'd lay money that you're gone within the week. Elder abuse specialists? Libby was agog and aghast beside me. And the authorities, I added, plus a team of medical specialists. She might not have come right out and said that I'm under investigation for defrauding a dementia-ridden old man, but she sure as hell implied it. She doesn't get to do that. Libby was pissed, a blue-haired, ponytailed, gothic ball of fury. She can't just say whatever she wants. Call Elisa. You have lawyers. What I had was a headache. This wasn't unexpected. Given the size of the fortune at stake, it was inevitable. Orrin had warned me that the women would come after me in the courtroom. I'll call Elisa tomorrow, I told Libby. Right now, I'm going to bed. Chapter 30. They don't have a legal leg to stand on. I didn't have to call Elisa in the morning. She showed up and found me. Rest assured, we will shut this down. My father will be meeting with Zara and Constantine later today. Constantine? I asked. Zara's husband. Thea's uncle, I thought. They know, of course, that they stand to lose a great deal by challenging the will. Zara's debts are substantial, and they won't be cleared if she files a suit. What Zara and Constantine don't know, and what my father will make very clear to them, is that even if a judge were to rule Mr. Hawthorne's latest will to be null and void, the distribution of his estate would then be governed by his prior will, and that will left the Hawthorne family even less than this one. Traps upon traps. I thought about what Jameson said after the will had been read, and then I thought about the conversation I'd had with Xander over scones. Even if you thought that you'd manipulated our grandfather into this, I guarantee that he'd be the one manipulating you. How long ago did Tobias write his prior will? I asked, wondering if its only purpose had been to reinforce this one. 20 years ago in August, Lisa ruled out that possibility. The entire estate was to go to charity. 20 years? I repeated. That was longer than any of the Hawthorne grandsons, except Nash, had been alive. He disinherited his daughters 20 years ago and never told them? Apparently so. And in answer to your query yesterday, Elisa was nothing if not efficient. The firm's records show that Mr. Hawthorne legally changed his name 20 years ago last August. Prior to that, he had no middle name. Tobias Hawthorne had given himself a middle name at the same time he disinherited his family. Tattersall, Tatters, all. Given everything that Jameson and Xander had told me about their grandfather, that seemed like a message. Leaving the money to me, and before me to charity, wasn't the point. Disinheriting his family was. What the hell happened 20 years ago in August? I asked. Elisa seemed to be weighing her response. My eyes narrowed, and I wondered if any part of her was still loyal to Nash, to his family. Mr. Hawthorne and his wife lost their son that summer, Toby. He was 19, the youngest of their children. Elisa paused, then forged on. Toby had taken several friends to one of his parents' vacation homes. There was a fire. Toby and 3 other young people perished. I tried to wrap my mind around what she was saying. Tobias Hawthorne had written his daughters out of his will after the death of his son. He was never the same after Toby died, Zara had said that. when she thought that she'd been passed over for her sister's sons. I searched my mind for Skye's reply. Disappeared, Skye had insisted, and Zara had lost it. Why would Skye say that Toby disappeared? Elisa was caught off guard by my question. Clearly, she didn't remember the exchange at the reading of the will. Between the fire and a storm that night, Elisa said, once she recovered, Toby's remains were never definitively found. My brain worked overtime trying to integrate this information. Couldn't Zara and Skye have their lawyer argue that the old will was invalid too, I asked? Written under duress, or he was mad with grief, or something like that? Mr. Hawthorne signed a document reaffirming his will yearly, Elisa told me. He never changed it, until you. Until me. My entire body tingled just thinking about it. How long ago was that? I asked. Last year. What could have happened to make Tobias Hawthorne decide that instead of leaving his entire fortune to charity, he was going to leave it to me? Maybe he knew my mother. Maybe he knew she died. Maybe he was sorry. Now, if your curiosity has been sated, Elisa said, I would like to return to more pressing issues. I believe my father can get a handle on Zara and Constantine. Our biggest remaining PR issue is... Elisa steeled herself. Your sister. Libby? That hadn't been what I was expecting. It's to everyone's benefit if she lies low. How could she possibly lie low, I asked. This was the biggest story on the planet. For the immediate future, I'd advised her to stay on the estate, Elisa said, and I thought about Libby's comment that she had nothing but time. Eventually, she can think about charity work if she would like, but for the time being, we need to be able to control the narrative, and your sister has a way of... drawing attention. I wasn't sure if it was a reference to Libby's fashion choices or her black eye. Anger bubbled up inside me. My sister can wear whatever she wants, I said flatly. She can do whatever she wants. If Texas high society and the tabloids don't like it, that's too damn bad. This is a delicate situation, Elisa replied calmly, especially with the press. And Libby... She hasn't talked to the press, I said, as sure of that as I was of my own name. Her ex-boyfriend has. Her mother has. Both are looking for ways to cash in. Elisa gave me a look. I don't need to tell you that most lottery winners find their existence made miserable as they drown in requests and demands from family and friends. You are blessedly short on both. Libby, however, is another matter. If Libby had been the one to inherit, instead of me, she would have been incapable of saying no. She would have given and given to everyone who managed to get their hooks in her. We might consider a one-time payment to the mother, Elisa said, all business, along with a non-disclosure agreement preventing her from talking about you or Libby to the press. My stomach rebelled at the idea of giving money to Libby's mom. The woman didn't deserve a penny. But Libby didn't deserve to have to see her mother regularly trying to sell her out on the nightly news. Fine, I said, clenching my teeth, but I'm not giving anything to Drake. Elisa smiled, a flash of teeth. Him, I'll muzzle for fun. She held out a thick binder. In the meantime, I've assembled some key information for you, and I have someone coming in this afternoon to work on your wardrobe and appearance. My what? Libby, as you said, can wear whatever she wants, but you don't have that luxury. Elisa shrugged. You're the real story here. Looking the part is always step one. I had no idea how this conversation had started with legal and PR issues, detoured through Hawthorne family tragedy, and ended with me being told that by my lawyer that I needed a makeover. I took the binder from Elisa's outstretched hand, tossed it on the desk, then headed for the door. Where are you going? Elisa asked after me. I almost said the library, but Grayson's warning from the day before was still fresh in my mind. Doesn't this place have a bowling alley? Chapter 31. It really was a bowling alley. In my house. There was a bowling alley in my house. As promised, there were only 4 lanes, but otherwise it had everything you'd expect a bowling alley to have. There was a ball return, pin setters on each lane, a touchscreen to set up the games, and 55-inch monitors overhead to keep track of the score. Emblazoned on all of it, the balls, the lanes, the touchscreens, the monitors, was an elaborate letter H. I tried not to take that as a reminder that none of this was supposed to be mine. Instead, I focused on choosing the right ball, the right shoes, because there were at least 40 pairs of bowling shoes on a rack to the side. Who needs 40 pairs of bowling shoes? Tapping my finger against the touchscreen, I entered my initials, AKG. An instant later, a welcome flashed across the monitor. "Welcome to Hawthorne House, Avery Kylie Grahams." The hairs on my arms stood up. I doubted programming my name into this unit had been a top priority for anyone the last couple of days. And that means... "Was it you?" I asked out loud, addressing the words to Tobias Hawthorne. Had one of his last acts on Earth been to program this welcome? I pushed down the urge to shiver. At the end of the second lane, pins were waiting for me. I picked up a ball, 10 pounds, with a silver H on a dark green background. Back home, the bowling alley had offered 99-cent bowling once a month. My mom and I had gone every time. I wished that she were here, and then I wondered, if she were alive, would I even be here? I wasn't a Hawthorne. Unless the old man had chosen me randomly, unless I had somehow done something to catch his attention, his decision to leave everything to me had to have something to do with her. If she'd been alive, would you have left the money to her? At least this time I wasn't addressing Tobias Hawthorne out loud. What were you sorry for? Did you do something to her? Not do something to her? Or for her? "I have a secret," I heard my mom saying. I threw the ball harder than I should have and hit only 2 pins. If my mom had been here, she would have mocked me. I concentrated then and bowled. 5 games later, I was covered in sweat and my arms were aching. I felt good. Good enough to venture back out into the house and go hunting for the gym. Athletic complex might have been a more accurate term. I stepped out onto the basketball court. The room jutted out into an L shape, with 2 weight benches and 6 workout machines in the smaller part of the L. There was a door on the back wall. As long as I'm playing Dorothy and Oz. I opened it and found myself looking up. A rock climbing wall stretched out 2 stories overhead. A figure grappled with a near-vertical section on the wall, at least 20 feet up, with no harness. Jameson. He must have sensed me somehow. "Ever climbed one of these before?" he called down. Again, I thought of Grayson's warning. But this time, I told myself I didn't give a damn about what Grayson Hawthorne had to say to me. I walked over to the climbing wall, planted my feet at the base, and did a quick survey of the available hand and footholds. "First time," I called back to Jameson, reaching for one of them. "But I'm a quick learner." I made it until my feet were about 6 feet off the ground, before the wall jutted out at an angle designed to make things difficult. I braced one leg against a foothold and the other against a wall and stretched my right arm for the handhold, a fraction of an inch too far away. I missed. From the ledge above me, a hand snaked down and grabbed mine. Jameson smirked as I dangled midair. "You can drop," he told me, "or I can try to swing you up." "Do it." I bit back the words. Oren was nowhere to be seen, and the last thing I needed to do, alone with the Hawthorne, was go higher. Instead, I let go of his arm and braced for impact. After I landed, I stood, watching Jameson work his way back up the wall, muscles tensing against his thin white t-shirt. "This is a bad idea," I told myself, my heart jumping. "Jameson Winchester Hawthorne is a very bad idea." I hadn't even realized I remembered his middle name until it popped into my head. A last name, just like his first. Stop looking at him. Stop thinking about him. The next year is going to be complicated enough without complications. Feeling suddenly like I was being watched, I turned to the door and found Grayson staring straight at me. His light eyes were narrowed and focused. "You don't scare me, Grayson Hawthorne." I forced myself to turn away from him, swallowed, and called up to Jameson. "I'll see you in the library." Chapter 32. The library was empty when I stepped through the door at 9:15, but it didn't stay empty for long. Jameson arrived at 9:30, and Grayson let himself in at 9:31. "What are we doing today?" Grayson asked his brother. "We?" Jameson shot back. Grayson meticulously cuffed his sleeves. He changed after his workout, donning a stiff colored shirt like his armor. Can't an older brother spend time with his younger brother and an interloper of dubious intentions without getting the third degree? "He doesn't trust me with you," I translated. "I'm such a delicate flower." Jameson's tone was light, but his eyes told a different story. In need of protection and constant supervision. Grayson was undaunted by sarcasm. "So it would seem." He smiled, the expression razor sharp. "What are we doing today?" he repeated. I had no idea what it was about his voice that made him so impossible to ignore. Eris and I, Jameson replied pointedly, are following a hunch, doubtlessly wasting sinful amounts of time on what I'm sure you would consider to be nonsensical flapdoodle. Grayson frowned. I don't talk like that. Jameson let the arch of his eyebrow speak for himself. Grayson narrowed his eyes. And what hunch are the two of you following? When it became clear that Jameson wasn't going to answer, I did. Not because I owed Grayson Hawthorne a single damn thing. Because part of any winning strategy, long term, was knowing when to play your opponent's expectations and when to subvert them. Grayson Hawthorne expected nothing from me. Nothing good. We think your grandfather's letter to Jameson included a clue about what he was thinking. What he was thinking, Grayson repeated, sharp eyes making a casual study of my features, and why he left everything to you. Jameson leaned back against the doorframe. It sounds like him, doesn't it? He asked Grayson. One last game? I could hear in Jameson's tone that he wanted Grayson to say yes. He wanted his brother's agreement, or possibly approval. Maybe some part of him wanted for them to do this together. For a split second, I saw a spark of something in Grayson's eyes, too, but it was extinguished so quickly I was left wondering if the light in my mind were playing tricks on me. Frankly, Jamie, Grayson commented, I'm surprised you still feel you know the old man at all. I am just full of surprises. Jameson must have caught himself wanting something from Grayson, because the light in his own eyes went out, too. And you can leave any time, Gray. I think not, Grayson replied. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't. He let those words hang in the air. Or is it? Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. My eyes darted toward Jameson, who stood eerily, absolutely still. He left you the same message, Jameson said finally, pushing off the doorway and pacing the room. The same clue. Not a clue, Grayson countered, an indication that he wasn't in his right mind. Jameson whirled on him. You don't believe that. He assessed Grayson's expression, his posture. But a judge might. Jameson shot me a look. He'll use his letter against you if he can. He might have given his letter to Zara and Constantine already, I thought. But according to what Elisa had told me, that wouldn't matter. There was another will before this one, I said, looking from brother to brother. Your grandfather left your family even less than that one. He didn't disinherit you for me. I was looking at Grayson when I said those words. He disinherited the entire Hawthorne family before you were even born, right after your uncle died. Jameson stopped pacing. You're lying. His entire body went tense. Grayson held my gaze. She's not. If I'd been guessing how this would go, I would have guessed that Jameson would believe me and that Grayson would be the skeptic. Regardless, both of them were staring at me now. Grayson broke eye contact first. You might as well tell me what you think that godforsaken letter means, Jamie. And why, Jameson said through gritted teeth, would I give away the game like that? They were used to competing with each other, to pushing to the finish line. I couldn't shake the feeling that I didn't belong here, between them, at all. You do realize, Jamie, that I am capable of staying here. You know I'll reason it out. With the two of you in this room indefinitely, Grayson said. As soon as I see what you're up to, you'll... I was raised to play, same as you. Jameson stared hard at his brother, then smiled. It's up to the interloper of dubious intentions. His smile turned to a smirk. He expects me to send Grayson packing. I probably should have, but it was entirely possible that we were wasting our time here, and I had no particular objection to wasting Grayson Hawthorne's. He can stay. You could have cut the tension in the room with a knife. All right, Eris. Jameson flashed me another wild smile. As you wish.